It's the Newton's Lab Podcast number one. In this episode, we'll talk about Newton's Lab and the guy who's behind it. We'll cover science superheroes from the past and present, and what science is really all about, what it is and what it is not. We'll also cover some basic traits of real science, and they may not be exactly what you might expect. Then we'll wrap up with some thoughts guaranteed to encourage you. All this and more is coming up right around the corner on the Newton's Lab Podcast. Welcome to the very first episode of the Newton's Lab Podcast. I'm your host, Troy Eckhart. Because this is our first podcast, let me take a moment to introduce myself and to tell you a bit about my intentions concerning Newton's Lab. I am a Christian. I'm also the happily married father of six children, so far. The oldest one just turned 12 last week, and the youngest will be 8 weeks old this week. And yes, we know what causes that. And no, we don't know if we're done yet. I do not aspire to be the next Mr. Jim Bob Duggar, but I do have some very good friends who have 11 children, and they seem to be pretty happy. So, we'll see. Anyway, I'm a Bible-believing Christian and a creationist. I believe God created the world as we now know it in six literal 24-hour days. I believe that Jesus Christ is the author and finisher of our faith, and I have been saved by my faith in Him through His grace. I believe that the glory and majesty of God is displayed through His creation, particularly when we get down to the beautiful paradox of simplicity and complexity of His mathematics, physics, and chemistry, but certainly also in His biology, geology, and ecology. I hold a teaching certificate issued by the Florida Board of Education. During the first 7 years after I received my first degree, I taught in private and public high schools and middle schools. I have taught German, physics, and physical science in those schools. I enjoy teaching, and I enjoy science, but I did not get a lot of satisfaction from teaching in public schools, so I left in 2000. Since that time, I have earned other degrees and have been in business for myself, but I miss teaching as a profession. I do get to teach my own children many topics in our home school, though, but my wife is their main teacher. My plans for Newton's Lab involve preparing articles, podcasts, and videos that will entertain and educate anyone who's interested in learning about science from a biblical worldview. In time, I hope to be able to offer comprehensive courses for homeschoolers and anyone else who would like to learn from a guy who believes that the Bible and science are not at odds with each other. Ever since I was a child, I have enjoyed reading about and studying all sorts of scientific topics. My earliest contemporary science hero was Don Herbert. You might not know him by that name, but you probably do recognize his stage name, Mr. Wizard. I watched hours and hours of Mr. Wizard shows as a kid. When I got a little bit older, I came across the works of Dr. Irwin Moon. He's the founder of the Moody Institute of Science in Chicago. For the first time, I had discovered a man who was bold enough to speak of his love for Jesus and of his love for scientific principles at the same time. I have every video ever produced by Moody which features Dr. Moon, and I never grow tired of watching his sermons from science. I love to sit down with my children and pop in a Mr. Wizard or a Dr. Moon video and watch and enjoy. One of my absolute favorite scientists of all time, though, is Sir Isaac Newton. Although he lived about 300 years ago, his work in mathematics and science is still so important that he is considered to be one of the most influential men of all time. Not only was he a great scientist, but he also was a Christian. He wrote quite a bit about science, but even more about the Bible. For these reasons, he is like a superhero to me, so I have named Newton's Lab after him. In case you did not download this podcast from the Newton's Lab website, you can find this podcast and more at www.newtonslab.com. If you have any questions about science you'd like answered in future episodes of the Newton's Lab podcast, or any comments about the podcast or the website or anything really, you can send me an email at newton@newtonslab.com. I think a good topic for this first podcast would be a discussion on exactly what science is, because many people are very intimidated when it comes to teaching or learning about science. They have in their minds an inflated image of what science really is and what scientists are like. Some people assume that only the smartest of the smart can understand and teach science, and that the process of science itself is a sacred ritual. In its truest, purest sense, science is just the search for knowledge. That's it, nothing more. In that regard, we are all scientists. We're all searching for knowledge. We want to know what works in our lives and what doesn't. Things like which laundry detergent will work the best for the least amount of money, or which car in our price range will last the longest and put up with the most abuse while costing the least amount of money in repairs. We want to know which route to take to work to get us there in the shortest amount of time, or with the least amount of stress. Two of my sons, aged 10 and 12, are outdoors kind of guys, and they love to make things to work and play with outside. One of their favorite pastimes is the construction of bows and arrows. Although they might not realize it, their search for just the right type of wood, the perfect string tension, etc., is the beginning of a scientific search for knowledge. One of my daughters, who is 7, enjoys designing teddy bears and creating them by hand. Her trial and error approach to finding the right thread tension and the best way to attach little eyes and other pieces is the start of a scientific inquiry. Of course, there are some rules that must be applied when searching for knowledge in order to call that search truly scientific. These rules are collectively called the scientific method. The purpose of the scientific method is to gather information in a way that ensures that the information is worthwhile. If we follow the rules, we can be sure that the results of our scientific experimentation are observable, measurable, and reproducible. If they are not, then it is generally said that our information has not been gotten scientifically. Those three words I just said are very important: observable, measurable, and reproducible. Let's take a look at each one of them. The results of scientific experiments must be observable. But this means different things to different people, because we observe things in different ways. Ordinarily, humans make observations through their senses. If I were to ask you to tell me how many senses we have and to name them, you would probably come up with 5: vision, hearing, smell, taste, and touch. But are those the only senses God gave us? A woman named Catherine Lynn Gertz wrote a very interesting book called Culture and the Senses. In it, she told about a tribe of people in Ghana called the Anlo Yu. While she was talking to some of them about the well-known 5 senses that we are all quick to talk about, they started asking, well, what about the other one? They didn't mean some sort of weird ESP. They were talking about a sense that we all have and that we would probably be completely inhibited without. To lose it would be worse than losing our sight or hearing, and certainly worse than losing our sense of smell. Can you guess what they were asking about? It's the sense of balance. Physiologists now think that there are at least 3 other senses as well: the sense of temperature, the sense of pain, and the kinesthetic sense, which would tell you that your arm is above your head even if your eyes were closed. Why did I point this out? Remember, we're talking about science being observable. But that doesn't always mean visible. We can smell some reactions. We can feel a beaker pulling the heat from our hand. I'm often perplexed when I talk to atheists who immediately discount any sort of compatibility between the Bible and scientific inquiry because they believe that God is unobservable. On one hand, I can't help but wonder if there might be a sense that we haven't named yet that we use to detect God. Even if not, there are certainly other proofs of his existence. For example, we know that water molecules have a shape with a positive and a negative side, in part because water forms an interesting skin that we call surface tension. We see bugs walk on water, And we know that water travels up tiny tubes like the ones inside trees. But most of us have never directly observed the interaction of molecules of water at the microscopic level. Still, we take what we observe, and we guess at what we cannot observe. Science is absolutely filled with these guesses. They're called theories. For an idea to be promoted from being a theory to being a law takes a lot of testing and observing. There are many times more theories than there are laws. Don't let anyone tell you that God and science don't mix simply because he might not be observable. Some scientists love to play around with interesting subjects like string theory and the existence of dark matter, and the only indication that these things might be true is indirect evidence. That brings us to my second point. Science must be measurable. That means that whatever we observe, we must be able to quantify or put a number on. Well, this qualification is sort of a subcategory of observability. If something can be observed, it can be measured in some way. Sometimes it takes creative ways to figure out how to measure something. For example, Archimedes was a Greek scientist who lived about 200 years before Jesus was born on the earth. Archimedes was asked by King Hiero II, so the legend says, to figure out if the king's new crown was made of solid gold, or if the goldsmith had cheated him by mixing the gold with something else. According to the story, Archimedes figured out while he was taking a bath that he could use the amount of water displaced by the crown and compare it to the amount of water displaced by a piece of gold known to be pure. He actually probably did something a little bit more complicated, but you get the picture. If the legend is right, Archimedes was so excited when he thought of the way to measure the crown that he jumped up from his tub and ran through the streets naked yelling, "Eureka! Eureka!" which is Greek for "I have found it." If something cannot be observed, it cannot be measured. So we go back to the same old argument. Why is it okay to make wild guesses in the name of science, but only when the guess doesn't involve God? Point number three. Science must be reproducible. This simply means that if you do the experiment 100 times, you should get the same results 100 times. But it's hard to make sure you can get the same results if you cannot measure what you cannot observe. Am I saying that we should throw these characteristics of science in the trash can? Not at all. For most everyday science, these traits are fine. The problem is, we don't know as much as we like to think we do. We're working on a jigsaw puzzle with quite a few pieces missing most of the time, so it's all right to guess at some things. It's still science, even if the closest you can get to true knowledge is a theory. Scientists do it all the time. Remember, science isn't truth, it's the search for truth. So to sum it all up, pure science must be observable, measurable, and repeatable. It's true. Without these traits, the answer we think we found is probably not the right answer at all. But we must start with something directly observable if we want to look for those traits, and not everything is so easily observed. We have a long way to go until we know it all. Some people make a religion out of science, and with their faith placed firmly in that religion, they don't have any room to consider the God of the Bible. It's a shame, really, but it's very common. Remember, science is a tool. It's a changing process, and our God does not change. You know, some will say that theories of intelligent design or biblical creationism, because they're not observable, measurable, and repeatable, are not real scientific theories. The truth is, though, that no one observed the origin of life. Evolutionists believe that life appeared from non-living material. This is a phenomenon we call spontaneous generation, and Louis Pasteur disproved it in 1861. To this very day, no one has created life in a lab. No scientist has observed any sort of example of increasing complexity in living tissue. Evolutionists say that we're the products of random accidents. A random accident is not observable, it's not measurable, and it's not repeatable. So how can they call it science? I'll tell you how. It's because all learning begins with faith in something. How can you learn about Australia, for example, if you've never been there? You have to have faith that it even exists. Mathematical theorems are built out of unprovable statements we call postulates. Historians place their faith in original documents. All rational questioning begins with faith. Could it be, then, that the problem with some scientists isn't that they don't like faith, but that they don't want to be answerable to God? I think this is the case a lot of the time. I choose to put my faith in the foundation of the Lord Jesus Christ for the reasons the Apostle Paul laid out in Colossians 1, verse 15, 16, and 17. He said, "Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature. By him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist." I choose to begin my searches for truth with faith in the God of truth. Am I any less of a scientist because I choose to believe this rather than an unobserved explosion a very long time ago created everything that exists and it made everything out of nothing? Of course not. In some later episode of the Newton's Lab podcast, I want to talk about some of the really insane religions that men have made up just so they don't have to be accountable to God. Religions like naturalism, humanism, and environmentalism. Once you see how silly these beliefs are, no so-called man of science will ever be able to belittle you for your faith again, because you'll know why you believe what you believe, and you'll know why he believes what he believes, and believe me, there's no comparison. Your beliefs are definitely superior to his. Okay, here's the big question. How is your self-esteem? I know that both parents and their children may be listening to me, but really, in the grand scheme of things, parents and children are not really all that different. Some kids are intimidated by the thought of having to learn science, and some parents are intimidated by the thought of having to teach it to them. Part of that intimidation stems from a fear of scientific processes in general. Now, the scientific method, that's the set of rules that we use to make sure our science is observable, measurable, and repeatable, is not a mysterious process that can be understood only by really academically talented people. It's actually a fairly basic and easy to understand procedure, and we will go into more detail about it in another episode of the Newton's Lab podcast. For now, believe me when I say that it's easy enough for anyone to understand. Another part of the intimidation comes from a fear of math. There are some fields of study within scientific education that require some rather complicated mathematics. I'm reminded of the calculus required for my Physics for Engineers courses many years ago. There are also some scientific fields that examine some very complex interactions which require a lot of memorization, such as organic chemistry. These are examples of studies that are common not in elementary, middle, or high school science, but rather in the freshman year of studies for certain degrees like electrical engineering or pre-medicine. I do know of several homeschoolers that covered these advanced concepts while still learning in the home, however. My point in mentioning these fields of study is to encourage you, not to dissuade you from covering advanced topics when and if the time is right for you. Right now, you might not think you could even dream of covering such topics, but I know you can do much more than you think you can. Different people have different, seemingly native abilities. I'm not sure, really, how much of what we are good at is due to nature and how much of it is due to nurture. It's a question that's been raging for years. Are we who we are because we were born that way? Or are we who we are because of the way we were nurtured and the things that we experienced in our lives? I'm an eternal optimist, so I lean quite a bit toward the nurture argument, to tell you the truth. For example, I am very good at some skills, and I'm very lousy at some others. I once designed and built a custom set of built-in bookcases for my home, which I enjoy to this day. I got tired of the rickety, racking, sagging, unsightly fiberboard bookshelves that I had scattered all around my house, so I bit the bullet and I built something I could be proud of. I had never done such a thing before, but I had read a lot of home maintenance and woodworking information, and I just convinced myself that I could do it. On the other hand, if you held a gun to my head and told me to draw a picture of a bird, my absolute best result would be something that my 5-year-old son could also accomplish. I cannot draw to save my life. But something inside me tells me that to actually believe that I could not learn to draw would be to cut myself short. I like to believe that I could do anything if I just set my mind to it. I just have not tried hard enough to learn drawing techniques in enough detail. I have not had the gun to my head, so to speak, so there's not been enough reason for me to learn to draw. I tell myself that if I really wanted to draw, I could do it, and I believe it with my whole heart. I would need the help of a lot of people who could teach me how to draw, of course. Maybe some help from books, maybe some help from the internet. Something would get me started, though. And I could learn all about it and become good at it, if that was my desire. Parents, do you really want to teach your children to enjoy and appreciate science? I'm here to help you through it. Maybe you're a homeschooling parent and you fear that you're about to step out of your realm of comfort because it's time to stop pressing leaves in books and time to start learning the chemical composition of chlorophyll. Maybe because you never learned these things, you feel incompetent to teach them. Maybe your child is enrolled in a public school, but the teacher just isn't getting through to him or her. Maybe your child has the same mental block to science that you think you have. Students, are you ready to leap deeper into the fun and exciting world of science? Maybe you've had some rough experiences with science in the past. Maybe you've enjoyed your science lessons, but you haven't really understood everything. Whoever you are, and no matter what your past experiences have been, you can do it. Science is a very rewarding and worthwhile study, and learning it will teach you basic skills that matter not just in science, but in all areas of daily living. Maybe you just like science, and you like the God who invented the universe, and you would like to listen to a guy talk about both at the same time. Your mind has an almost unlimited capacity to learn, and I want to help you. Biblical science education is my passion. And whether or not science is one of your passions, it can be something that you enjoy and something that enriches your life. Well, it's just about time to end this episode of the Newton's Lab podcast. I hope you found it worth your time to listen to. I look forward to hearing from you. If you have any questions or comments, send some email to newton@newtonslab.com. Until next time. Remember to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Remember to love your neighbor as yourself, and remember to beware of science falsely so called. I'm Troy Eckhart for Newton's Lab.